Well, happy new year. We're back. Sky is Blue podcast, bi-monthly. Just before the Portsmouth game in the FA Cup, the last time we brought you a podcast with me, Phil Tooley, Daryl Carpenter, Paul Fisher and Stuart Basson. So the old team back together again. And, well, we'll be talking about various games in the league for Chesterfield and also the FA Cup, maybe even touch on the FA Trophy at some stage. Looking back to the first half of the season as a whole, probably 2023 as a whole, seeing as it's a new year, and looking forward to what Chesterfield are doing. But, you know, since we were here last, cup run, not really running the FA Trophy, but still in it, Welling United to come. But Stuart Basson, most importantly of all, a great run in the National League that's kept Chesterfield at arm's length from Bromley and Barnet, really, even though they keep on churning out the positive results. But the game against Solihull on New Year's Day, a 14th consecutive home win in all competitions, barking mad.
It is, isn't it? It absolutely mental. It is, you know. And the noise when the third one went in, I don't think I've heard anything like that in this stadium. You know, then we won League Two championships in this stadium twice, you know, and things like that. You know, we've been 3-1 up against West Brom and all that, and the noise was just phenomenal, you know. As you say, longest run of home wins for a long time, isn't it? Unbeaten at home so far, which is glorious. Long may that continue. You know, not failed to score at home since February last year. We've got nearly a year scoring in every home game. You know, and to come back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 in any game is wonderful. But you know, against them, my goodness, wasn't that nice?
Especially on the back of that 2-0 defeat on Boxing Day.
Well, indeed, yeah. That was a hiccup now, wasn't it? That's all it was to look at it. You know, whereas if it had been 0-2 and stayed 0-2 yesterday, wasn't it? Then that would have been, you know, a serious kind of stutter, wouldn't it? And everybody, you know, you say Bromley keep going and Barnet keep going, they do, and until the 63rd minute yesterday they were only 4 points, was it, behind us. You know, and then they all, watching at home on the BBC website or whatever, had to watch as the goals went in, you know, 1-1, 2-2, 2-2, 3-2, and they must have thought, God, blimey, that must be that, you know, almost, you know. Not that anybody up here is, you know, I'm sure. But, to let them get so close and then say, oh, actually, we'll just have a 7-point margin, if you don't mind, you know. That must knock their confidence, not as much as a defeat would have knocked ours, obviously. But, you know, they see themselves closing and closing and closing and just having to win every game just to keep up. That must be immensely tiring to have to do that.
Well, Paul, last season we were looking at Wrexham and Notts County in the same vein, weren't we, that we'd win, you'd see that Wrexham, who were 2-0 down with 3 seconds to go, had win, and Notts County the same. So we know how Bromley feel.
Yeah, well, exactly. They're always chasing, aren't they? That's the thing. Once you're having to chase as well, it's always very difficult. And Chesterfield have found that the last two seasons, though, haven't they? You know, they've had a lead. They've been top, you know, and all of a sudden they've been overpowered. I think the first season or a couple of seasons ago, and it was Stockport, wasn't it, that they had a brilliant second half of the season run, didn't they?
So they sacked their manager in the autumn.
They had, yeah. And Chesterfield were always sort of playing catch up with that because they had the bad run around this time, didn't they? I know last season we had a bad run about this time, but so it just shows that yesterday's victory was a very important one morale wise and it just shows. I interviewed Tom Naylor after the game and he was just trying to set one game at a time, just, you know, just take it into one game at a time. And I think that's always been the focus. You know, there's been a lot of noise from Andy Woodman, Bromley manager, who knows exactly what he's doing. He's very clever and I really like him, and it's taking the heat off his team, and it's smart thinking from him in actual fact, because Paul Cook yesterday, you know, he let his guard down a little bit by saying he feels it's his team's time and that, but he was also very reflective on the fact that he knows this division now and knows what's it about, and he knows it's not done till it's done. So it's I'm just really really pleased they got that win yesterday.
And were you part of that wall of noise Daz yesterday, and you know, old timers like me and you, when you have to get up three times in 6 minutes like that, it's a strain on the on the knees, isn't it?
I don't get up as quickly as I did, I'll give you that. Especially as I'm hemmed in rather in the massive, you know, we've got some big lads, so in fact if two of them go up either side, you kind of lifted up anyway, which is a good thing. The other thing I found fascinating was the level of panic after Boxing Day in the fan base was getting a bit ridiculous to me. If anybody had watched the game or attended the game, you knew it was a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely all on Boxing Day.
I mean, when we'd lost at Altrincham, we played poorly, we'd led, but we deserved to lose. Same at Southend.
Well, they played really well at Southend, didn't they?
Well, I just think we gave it away, but we were never on it all day. In either of those two games, we didn't really deserve to be in front. There were nothing games, but we gave them away. Whereas on Boxing Day, we were terrific. We really were terrific, apart from, what was it, 5 minutes of madness?
Yeah, the Jones misplaced pass was unfortunate. When you look back at the Solihull second goal, it was a well-crafted goal. Give them some credit for that.
Absolutely. But I think the turning point in that game was actually the Grigg disallowed goal, because quite clearly it was miles onside, 2 yards onside. It's a great cross. First time finish, typical Grigg finish, and that with 25 minutes on the clock or whatever there was, if that goes in, it would have been the same result or better than it was yesterday, in my opinion. So when we get back in the same hole again, we've dug the same hole again, two games running, there was an air of panic. In fact, my good mate John, who sits at the side of me, and he'll bear this out when we next see one another, we almost had a row because he's saying, hey, it's not good enough and this and that and the other and blah blah blah, and I say, stop panicking, patience, just keep doing what we're doing and it'll come. 6 minutes later, he's jumping up and down, grabbing me and giving me a kiss for New Year. You know, but there was that noise you talked about, Stu, was just relief, wasn't it? It was the lid coming off. God, we dodged a bullet almost.
and combined with 3 in 6 minutes, which doesn't happen very often.
No.
There was some scenes in the media box, I have to admit. I mean, when the Solihulls got their second goal, their fellas went up like a hot air balloon, so they were giving it large in the press box. And I noticed to my right, when the third goal went in,
Josh,
your colleague, he almost took down the whole stand with his jumping around.
He did apologise for that in the podcast that we do after the game. We do it live, but podcast it after the whistle. He did mention it. I was looking at the action on the pitch and didn't quite notice the levels to which Josh was leaping around, because like us all, you know, it's difficult to leap around when you're not 8 stone 6.
Yeah. there was a great, I rewatched the game this morning, and when that third goal goes in and they're replaying the goal,
the third
goal, Adam Virgo, I know, comes in for a lot of stick, you know, some of it justified. But one of the things he said was, since half time, Chesterfield have just been relentless. And that did sum us up. We this season we've been relentless. In that second half, we were relentless.
There's been games like that where you've seen Chesterfield not allowing the opposition a single touch and weirdly the connections are there, it's in the second half. So you know, it's been like that the pattern that I'm thinking that they were talking about is that they're fit, they're totally demoralised inside in the second half.
And Cookie said it in his post-match to TNT Sport, you know, we feel if we keep going and we keep doing the same, we will wear teams down.
But Stu, 32 goals here at the SMH in the National League in the second half. The second highest home scorers this season, Barnett, or is it, you know, it's Bromley, have only scored 30 goals in any 90 minutes at home. So we scored more in the second half than any other team scored at home in the entire game. That just sums up the fitness levels and the, you know, the negative ne'er-do-well merchants who are 1-0 down at half time think it's the end of the world. We've scored 32 goals after the break. That's more than John Duncan's side scored in the season.
Yeah. If we're selling second half season tickets, as we are, we ought to make sure on the advertising that it's the second half of the season and not just the second half of the match.
Just the second half.
I tell you what, back in the old Salter Gate days when they opened the free gate at half time, I tell you what, nobody would have paid to get in. We'll wait till half time and get in for free.
Absolutely.
It's a rare event, a goal in the first half, especially into the North Stand, isn't it?
I'm being starved of value for money in my seat in W7, but I don't mind.
No. Actually, you had a great view of the. I know it was over the line for Brandon Horton. He made a despairing dive. I mean, it was questionable. Straight away, the Lions made a decision and went up, so you had to go with that.
Over the line for me, straight away.
I felt from my. You and I have seen much around. My thoughts were it was over the line.
Yeah.
And equally, from the goal that they scored from their first corner of the game, we were wondering, well, did the keeper get a fingertip on that? None of us saw a deflection.
No, there was no touch. If you look at it from an angle behind the goal, it didn't flick fracking turn at all.
No.
So it wasn't a corner.
Yeah.
So, and I questioned that, was it was a corner anyway, because not even many of their players seemed to go up
for
it.
Would it have come off there was a Town player challenging their Freckleton, guy when he shot? Yeah, would it have just skimmed off him in the challenge?
I think that's
it. Was only Freckleton and the goalkeeper, and it looked to us as though Tyre had pulled his arm away when he realised it was going wide, because he was diving to the right. But anyway, at least it didn't
cross
in the end.
But how often do goals come from those situations?
Yes.
It's like when you give a daft back pass that rolls behind, a number of times you'll see there's a goal coming off the back of this.
Which
happened
with Deere Dublin, didn't it? And that's for me, Cambridge, Wembley. But no, and you mentioned Freckleton there. Now, there's been players, King, Shackleford, Boot, in the time that we're talking about on this podcast, who've not really played a lot of football in the first team this season, who've come in. Now, Freckleton's played with some degree of success at left-back, but that's his first, apart from Southport and the trophy, as a left-centre-half, and he's got the giant Beck to worry about. Now, I've not seen the corner goal back, but apparently he slipped, according to Danny Webb. But he did all right, didn't he, Paul?
I think so. I think he did. I think he did fine. I think you know, he's not a commander of you know, like a strong. You know, if you stood next to Jamie Grimes, you immediately kind of intimidated, despite the fact he's one of the nicest people you could ever meet. Freckleton doesn't give that opinion, but what he's got is an extra yard of pace.
Yes.
I know Jamie Grimes has increased his pace this season, but Matt Freckleton really, for a 20-year-old, he reads the game quite well. You know, and I don't know where people are coming in with this sort of criticism, because I don't think he's put a foot wrong, really. I think his distribution,
but he's a kid that's in defence. They're really difficult.
Philly's played less than 50 professional games.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? His distribution's only going to get better, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, what a tutelage to work under and under Paul Cook. You know, and you're there for the season. You've now got that number five spot, so to speak, for the time being. You know, just try and enjoy your best. You're going to be playing at Vicarage Road, aren't you, on Saturday?
So and as it worked out yesterday, with the big man flicking it on for the little man to run onto, you had someone like Ash Palmer who could try and take on the big man, and Freckleton, with more pace, was better suited to following where the flick on it got, wasn't he? You know,
although Beck was clever enough to position himself near Freckleton quite often, but then, because you know he's a decent player, but of course Freckleton could step back and, as the ball's coming down, try and nick it, not try and jump for the header. That said, Beck doesn't jump, does he? He's like Barry Claxton, the former assistant manager of Rotherham United when Chesterfield signed Andy Morris. He famously sort of said, when he jumps, you can't slide a wet greener under his feet. and Beck was a little bit like that.
Yeah.
But Freckleton was clever enough to stand off and get the seconds. No point in taking yourself out of the game, going for a header, you're not going to win.
No, the other thing we did, again, you watch. My mate mentioned it at the match, and I'd not really paid much attention to it, but because he'd said it, when I was watching the replays again, I took notice. We positioned Naylor immediately in front of Beck with Freckleton behind him when he was in the left half of the pitch.
Mm.
When he went to the other side, we just let Palmer deal with him.
Mm.
But it was noticeable. Every time they played the ball down this right channel, their right channel, into Beck, he got Naylor in front of him and Freckleton behind him.
Mm.
So it was quite clever the way they'd adjusted what they were doing.
Yeah.
What they'd done is then drop that. That's negated Naylor then as an attacking player. So that's a little switch they're talking about for the second half.
Correct.
Then.
Yeah.
So they move that away straight away. Yeah. It must have been as soon as they'd gone 2-0 down, or even actually in the half time. Yeah. That just
but after that, they were virtually no threat anyway because we got the ball. Yes. So it became a non-issue. But up to that point, they were definitely doing that.
No question. And right at the beginning of the season, Paul Cook sort of had said that Naylor would be doing that in front of Jeff King because of Jeff King's defence. But one of the things with Freckleton moving into that centre half position in a National League game against let's not forget Solihull fourth. Solihull. They're fourth. Yeah. They were the last unbeaten team in the division. They're a side. And Paul Cook alluded to this in his post match stuff about the fullback always needing to be in front of the central defenders, and Jeff King knew that he hadn't stepped up for that goal.
758th time
So Freckleton's got to change his mindset.
Yes,
from playing in front
of the back four
to be the back four, not like a John Duncan, you're in a line. The old flat back four stuff. He's got to change his mindset after a dozen games at left back, where he is encouraged to push forward, instructed to push forward, to all of a sudden be in that back line with Palmer.
You're the one that's actually leading the press, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, you're deciding when to go and when not to go, rather than being led by the people behind you, in effect. But yeah, he was quite pointed in the way he had a go at Jeff for that. I've only reminded him 758 times that he's got to be ahead of the centre back.
Yeah, and Jeff was first up to do post match as well, and he said, "I think it might have been me that was playing him onside for the goal." But it was an interesting insight from Paul Cook. We said, "No, the fullbacks are told to be in front of the centre halves. They're normally in the opposite half, to be fair, most of the time." But Jeff King, he was also saying about he did an assist, didn't he? Of course, for Coltle's goal. But he was saying that when it hit short towards the near post, that was something that they were actually working on in training. It just didn't quite come off. Yeah. He's not going to go into detail what it is because you don't want to give away what it is. No. But I think Naylor's run was in there, so he said it was really, really close to coming off.
Mm.
But it wasn't that made a bad mistake. It was just that the whole thing didn't quite come off.
No, you can see what they're trying to do with that, aren't you? Because if you pack the back of the box, then that becomes densely populated. There's no one really in the front of the box. So if you can get someone making that run, you've got, you know, you're in the mix, aren't you? Yeah. And you've got time and space to turn and use the ball.
And there were, Chesterfield were scoring from corners for fun earlier on in the season, not quite so much lately. But there were different approaches. They had 16 corners, I think, in the Solihull game. There were different approaches. There were one or two where every Chesterfield player that was up was in the 6-yard area. Never seen that before.
No, I mean, Chesterfield scored their second goal, I think it's at the 13th corner, you know, so it was quite relentless, really, when you look. I didn't expect them to. I expect him to come back into the game, but I didn't expect it to happen in such a short period of time. You know, he just caught your breath and everything, and you know, having to do goal flashes back with the thing. Get ready, Paul. That's another goal at the SMH Group Stadium. It's quite incredible, really.
And we just briefly touched on Jeff King back in the picture. He was on the bench a couple. He played in the Southport game, but that was no surprise. But played in both Solihull games, 4 goals conceded in the 2 games that he's had, but he's got an assist that'll have made a difference. He said again to me, apart from the Southport game, that's the first time this season he's been on dead ball duty, because Mandeville was on them when he was in the side earlier in the in the season. So he's got to get his rangefinder bit rusty, but he did okay.
He did okay. I feel sorry for Shackleford, except I understand that there's rotation, and there's going to be rotation in this next 6 weeks because we've got a really heavy programme.
Yes.
But he's been terrific for me, Shackleford, this last... Well, since he came into the side, I don't think he's put a foot wrong.
Is he the unluckiest player in the squad, Stu, do you think?
You would think that, wouldn't you? Unlucky not to be in it on a on a full time basis. It's those injuries, isn't it? You know, last season kept him out for almost all of the season. It didn't really give him a chance to show us what he's got, you know. So you could understand him being overlooked. But since he came back in, you know, he's played, how many games has he played? About six or seven on the trot, something like that. He is unlucky to be left out, but then anyone that's left out nowadays is unlucky to be left out. You know, DJ, you might think, is the unluckiest player in the squad as well, you know, because he comes in and plays like he did yesterday, and he's out next game, and somebody else is here, you know.
But we heard Ollie Banks, some people heard Ollie Banks on the Beyond the 92 podcast that was given a great explanation about all of that. And Jeff King does as well. And a few weeks ago when DJ came back into the side, he was really emotional when he was talking to me about that. I was just not doing enough. I was expected to be in the side, and I know I wasn't doing enough. And that Ollie Banks insight said an awful lot. If you didn't listen to it, A, it's worth a listen. But B, it was all about, yes, of course you're disappointed when you're out, but nobody frets.
Yeah, I think, well, there was a point yesterday where he talked about Armando Dobry, did Paul Cook, and he mentioned, like, you know, he's been in for a few games now, we dropped him out, took him out for a rest against Solihull away, brought him back in.
I thought it was because he might have been wound up himself.
He said, didn't he, Paul, he said he can't play three games in a week.
In a week, he's not going to play him three games in a week. He's not going, because he had that time out with a hamstring injury last season, and he doesn't want that to occur again. And I think it's what he alluded to with Ollie Banks last season, when he got injured against York, never saw him again, and he wasn't at his best towards the back end of the season, so he struggled to get right back into the team, didn't he? So I think what he's done is sort of brought him in four or five games, get in your maximum, leave them out for a game, and you're back again in again, and you're avoiding that sort of that stress injury that you get at time to time.
And much that they're very, very different style of players, that central in the three attacking midfield suits Dobra and Banks.
Yeah, it does, and Jacobs as well, doesn't it? Yes. So
Jacobs never really gets a look in there.
No, it doesn't. And he's always pushed on to the right, isn't he? We've seen Ollie Banks adapt and move over to the right hand side as well, haven't we? Two goals against Kidderminster proved that, didn't they, as well? So, you know, so much flexibility in that three. You can pick any of them, and it's still a threat. And even Southport found that out, didn't they? You could put Harley Curtis behind Joe Quigley, and there you go. You've got another option, haven't you? So really good. So there's no let up, is there, really?
Let's just talk about Harley Curtis and the guys that are out on loan, because Curtis was terrific.
He was brilliant in that
match, wasn't he? And he's had a brief sub appearance in the National League, and that's the only time we've seen him. But you know, when you talk about the magnificence of those players in there. But looking at the guys who were away on loan, Bailey Clements was 12 starts and a goal for Easley in the National League. Bailey Hobson, 15 starts and a sub, two goals in the National League, another goal in the FA Cup. Lawrence Maguire, 19 starts, a couple of goals for Crawley. They're all doing really, really well there. Will any of them be in Paul Cook's thoughts this week?
Well, I've asked the question yesterday whether they'd be coming back, and this was to Danny Webb, so I can't get it from the mouth of truth, so I can't get it from him. But apparently it's going to be discussed this week. Now, Bailey Clements is playing every week. Would you want to bring him back? Well, apart from him being injured at the start of the season, he would have been playing left back all season.
And I'm
pretty certain that Paul Cook thinks the world of him, and he's going nowhere and expect a contract renewal pretty soon, but probably loaned out again. Yeah. You know, just getting regular football. So, but he's hardly thought of. Hobson obviously is in the first year of a second year deal. He can stay at Kidderminster for me. So he's getting regular football there. He's absolutely fine. And if needs be, there's a call on duty. Lawrence Maguire won't be coming back to Chesterfield Football Club. The sort of noises you're getting around the country is that it's either going to be a remainder of his contract on loan, or Crawley going to put a bid in for him. At whatever level, Chesterfield will want something back for him, maybe because they brought him up.
So
you know, a nominal fee, perhaps, really. But it might happen on the 30th of January. or it's going to be an extended contract deal. The other lads are at Matlock, they'll be there for the remainder of the season.
They're not realistically going to be challenging. Let's go on to some of the young lads in that Southport FA trophy game, because we saw Sam Hooper who featured against Colville last season in the same tournament, but Riley DeSena, the floppy haired central defender, plus Liam Jessop, who came on off the bench and scored two goals, Ali Mohiuddin as well, they all gave enormous pleasure, Daz, to the Chesterfield supporters that were at that match.
Well, yeah, and more so really to Neil and his team. I mean, it was delighted for me. You could hear in his voice when you were interviewing post match just what it meant to the whole academy and the staff and everyone on this side, if you like. The lads had been asked to step up and had done so in a fantastic way, represented themselves and the academy and the club, and put in a performance, put in a show, as we like to say, produced goals and moments. And I mean, the lad, the centre half lad, the Aussie lad,
Riley DeSena,
was terrific, wasn't he, on the day? Had a shaky
but first. He's not a kid. He's 20. And he's been playing for Stocksbridge Park Steels on a dual registration, playing against men.
He stood up against a Southport player who's been in Football League for a long time, hasn't he? Played all those games.
Southport had got a couple of really, really experienced players. The average age of the Southport team was 26, so they didn't play kids.
No.
That was their first team. And they're doing okay. They're mid-table in the
Russian transition, aren't they, at the minute? So Jim Bentley's trying to find out his best team, really. You see how many goals they've conceded since the six. There's been fours and fives. So I think he's going to say the defence isn't good enough right now.
But no, I mean, terrific performance. You just love the enthusiasm of the kids when they come in that instance. But they came in free. They were brave on the ball. They showed their ability, didn't they? All over the pitch. No one was afraid to have the ball, which takes some doing. There was a decent gait here again for what was just a trophy match. And I thought the older players in the side, like Jeff and one or two others that were in the team, helped them as well terrifically.
Well, Freckleton was playing like left centre back, and he was really nursing DeSena. Yeah. And they're the same age.
Yeah, exactly.
But because he got a little bit more experience.
Yeah. So it was great, wasn't it? Australians, Gibraltarians. It was like the United Nations. But what a lovely thing for the academy and Neil and all his team, because they do a terrific job. Mm.
And then, of course, aside including all of those guys apart from Liam, Jessop went to Long Eaton in the County Cup and just didn't play anywhere near the way that they did. And Long Eaton are having a shocker of a season. Paul Holland, the former Sparrow, is their director of football. I think he's head of football, I think technically is called. He doesn't run the team. But I was having a chat with him, and they got promoted last season, and it's just a much harder league, and they're really not doing very well. This season they're bottom or next to bottom of what in essence is a Southern League. The last few years they've been in the northeast counties, Midland League, and now they're in the Southern League. they're right on the cusp of all the borders of everything. But the youngsters got beat there. But I have a feeling that when the next round of the trophy comes up, it will be a similar side to that at Welling.
Well, Cook alluded to that, didn't he, in the interview? He said he's going to send a very youthful team. Curtis will be part of that as well. You're right, DeSena's, etc. Those Sam Hoopers will be getting another first team appearance against them, and it'll do them the world of good.
I went to a Central Midlands Alliance game on Saturday when we weren't playing the wonderfully named AFC Phoenix, which is Brinsworth. I put AFC Phoenix in the search for their Twitter X feed, and there's about 7,326 AFC Phoenixes around in the country, so it's not a unique name. And I was talking to Justin Tellis, who's the recruitment and development player, and sort of said, is it likely to be a young side? And he says, yeah, I think we'll be going down. He's going down, and I think he'll be doing commentary with me for that game, all things being equal. So I do think it'll be a youthful side.
Yes.
that plays in that game. And
well, they deserve a crack after what they did in the first match.
Of course they do. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And the difference is, whilst they'll be going out to win and everybody will win, it's now if you do progress, you're going to be able to win first team matches from Saturday.
Mm.
Now, if it's if they play a youth side, you might be able to say, well, can we play it on a Friday and still have the first team game on a Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but yeah, there's an argument for it. It's still only the Dagenham Redbridge game to rearrange.
Judging by it, you perhaps now, even though it's... even if they do somehow get through, you know, you want an away game, really looking at the pitch as it stands right now, don't you? Yeah. So,
we're sitting in the east stand at the moment, and it's been tipping it down with rain, and there's a bit of surface water on there. It really, we just need a week or two of fairly dry. But of course, whilst it's away at Watford on Saturday, you've then got two consecutive midweek games. It's a Wednesday, Tuesday, isn't it? Gateshead and Altrincham.
Mm.
So it's three Saturdays away.
Yeah.
But you've got two midweek games, so if it just keep on.
It's a talking point, isn't it? I'm sure we're going to bring it up now. Is the fact that why are we playing on a Wednesday? Well, there's a contractual agreement with Sheffield United to play at Chesterfield's football ground, you know, for their under 23s, and they're hosting Sheffield Wednesday on the Tuesday night, which might not go down well with some of the supporters, but you think about the gate receipts and the income and the whatever bars are going to be open.
Friendly as well.
Exactly. It's going to make Chesterfield a bit of money that they can't really afford to.
But the other element with it as well is it gives Chesterfield an extra day to recover from the Saturday game, and then it's the FA Trophy on the following Saturday.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's worked out well.
Yeah, I understand there was a negotiation between, I mean, Chesterfield and Gateshead should have been played in October.
That was the flood game, wasn't it?
Now, the clubs couldn't come to an agreement about the day. Gateshead were being a bit funny about whenever they wanted it to be. Chesterfield put in a few dates or something like that, not acceptable to Gateshead. They came back, then the National League took charge.
Yes.
And I think it's them that selected the Wednesday date. Yeah. Having said, Chesterfield said, well, we can't play on the Tuesday because they're.
Yeah.
So it's going to have to be the Wednesday. So it goes to a mutual arbiter of the National League, and they pick the game. So whilst it's an unfortunate time that it's in January, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? So.
And from the community football point of view, it gives fans of United and Wednesday the opportunity to engage with a successful football club.
And, you know, just as it sounds, some people work on Tuesdays but not Wednesdays, vice versa. Those who work on a Tuesday will be able to get on a Wednesday. So, you know, it's... But if you're playing at home on the Saturday, you don't want Wednesday football, do you?
Sorry,
if you're playing a first team match on the Saturday. Let's talk about Gateshead, because the next two home games, Gateshead and Altrincham, both in the playoff zone, you know, they're not going to be easy.
No,
because Gateshead play football and score a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Altrincham have know how to beat Chesterfield.
They do. I think we more or less beat ourselves, actually.
And
then they brought on Big Angus, and then we decided to just capitulate.
Well, gave him the ball.
Several
times. Yeah, big lad, would you like to go through, sir?
No, I'm an admirer of that, Phil Parkinson. I think he's done a really decent job. They're obviously still finding their feet. It's only the second.
It's perhaps the only Phil Parkinson I want my managing Chesterfield.
Yes, quite, Phil, quite. He's doing a good job there. It's only the second season, isn't it, full time? So I think they're still developing as a club, really. Gateshead have lost Mike Williamson, which is obviously a massive body blow, and they reacted quite badly to it the first few games.
They
had a little bit of a pick up in form, but they're wobbling again.
So lost one last three
games. Yeah, so. I think the fizz has gone out a little bit out of Gateshead.
Yeah. But York, their double header was against York, who were not uprooted in the trees, and they only picked 1 point up from that.
And I saw the game they had on TV at home to Halifax. And Halifax just mugged them, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, they stopped them playing, as Halifax can do, and hit them twice on the break. So, yeah, they'll not be easy games. I actually prefer teams that come and play us at football because I don't think teams can beat us playing us at football. So, whilst they'll not be easy games, the two midweek games amongst a plethora of other matches we've got in January and February, I'm still fairly relaxed, Philip, let's put it that way.
It's two teams I'm expecting Chesterfield to beat.
Yes.
But I'm also expecting Gateshead and Altrincham to be in the playoffs from what I've seen so far this season. You know, granted, I've only seen Gateshead on television.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but
the only team playing.
Exactly, yeah. The record speaks for themselves as well, that they've got a bit of a weakness about them, which Chesterfield should exploit.
Yes.
But Stephen Wern is a very good striker, and, you know, he's, you know, he knows what to do and where the back of the net is, so he's going to prove a little bit difficult, you know, in time. So,
Gateshead fifth, Altrincham six on 40 points. Same, they both played 25, same as Chesterfield. So, 22 points behind Chesterfield after only 25 games. It shows there's a point a game difference between the top of the table and the playoff zone. It's huge.
Yeah,
it's huge, isn't it?
Mm. It is, and yeah, you don't want to say it, do you? But can you see any sort of Aldershot who are in one out of the playoffs now kind of overhauling us and forcing us out of the playoffs? I, you know, you
well, the great news is when you've got, you know, if you look at the seventh place position is Halifax on 40 points. Eastleigh are 11th. You need to do anything, you've got to have a 20 goal a season striker. Well, they've got one, they're 11th. Yeah. 22, he got a hat trick, McCallum, didn't he? New Year's Day, and say they're 11th. So they're going to be battling. They'll take points off Barnet and Bromley. They might take points off Chesterfield, but they're going to take points off Barnet and Bromley at some stage, because there's a lot of competition between teams that are pretty level in ability. Bromley just seem to have got a little bit extra over. But as we're at Watford on Saturday, Bromley and Barnet both got tricky games. Bromley are away at Maidenhead, anything can happen there. Barnet are away at Altrincham. So we might be coming out of Vicarage Road in a stronger position than we went in without playing in the National League.
It is weird, isn't it, that it's not where it's a two horse race at the minute. If you look at it from the concept of the 7 point gap, is that if Chesterfield can afford to lose their games in hand and still have a 7 point
lead.
Yeah. You know,
I'd rather we didn't.
I know.
Know, but
well, let's not test the theory.
We don't want to do what when Clough left Burton and Roy McFarlane.
I think it was when Danny Wilson left Hartlepool, or Mike Newell left Hartlepool, I can't remember, but all of a sudden they went on a massive collapse, and nearly threw it away and limped over the line.
Were miles and miles and miles in front, weren't they?
Yeah, and stumbled over the line.
And Roy Mack took over.
We had one of our own.
They did win the league at the end of the day.
What did we go, 9 games or something without a win in February last year? Yes. And there were loads of games in Feb. Yeah, if we can just avoid that.
Well, just on a stupid stato point, if Bromley carry on for the rest of the season at their current points per game, so no improvement, no deterioration, they'll get 94 points. So for Chesterfield to get to 95, that's 33 points from 21 games. That's the form of Gateshead and Altrincham. So it's fifth or sixth place form, and we'll get in front of Bromley. They're just numbers.
I love that. That makes me feel so much better.
I
think we won't drop anywhere near that.
Neither do I.
Win one, lose one.
But it's if Bromley just carry on as they are, why wouldn't they? Say it's a question of, well, we just need to have the form of Gateshead and Altrincham. Gateshead have won 11, lost 8. Altrincham have won 10, lost 5. So you know, that's lost more than we've lost in the first half of the season by a while. So it's just a stat. It means nothing, but it puts it into some sort of perspective, because teams play each other. I'm sure Barnet and Bromley have got each other to play. I don't think they've played each other twice yet, have they? So there you go.
Yesterday, 10 more wins and we're there. And you thought, really?
Well, it's 92 points, 10 more wins, isn't it?
Yeah, you're not going to be far off, are you?
No, you're not going to be far off.
10 more wins and a few draws. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to be that. But when we don't draw, that's one
draw.
Of the things.
What's a draw?
Yeah, we don't draw. Don't draw too many, do we?
I wonder what the fewest number of draws for a team that's ever been promoted is.
Poor. Not quite sure. There you go. Not quite sure. Anyway, we'll look back a little bit next here on the Sky Is Blue podcast. We've been looking at the present and a little bit about the future. We'll also look forward to Watford a little bit more. But we'll be back in a moment looking back, well, as far back as Barnet in the FA Cup game against Portsmouth. So Chesterfield top of the league, 7 points ahead of Bromley, but they're in the FA Cup. They're playing Watford, Championship side, on Saturday. Who knows what they're going to do? They're 4 points off the playoff zone, back to the Premier League. This is their, as Paul pointed out to me yesterday, it's their second season of, and final season of parachute payments. It's only £34 million they're getting on parachute payment. So they'll be determined to make that count. Does that, Daz, mean that they'll not be bothered with the FA Cup? Because, you know, £34 million of money against £105,000 for the winner of the third round tie. Will Watford be up for it?
I'm sure, not knowing their squad intimately, I'm sure they've got enough players to put out a so-called weakened team that'll still be of decent quality. I mean, they've only been out of the Premier League 5 minutes, haven't they?
And they were FA Cup finalists 10 minutes ago.
Correct.
Was it 2019, was it?
Yeah.
They got stuff.
Yeah. but that having been said, I think we'll put what we consider a first 11 out. Of whatever mix Cookie decides on the day, and I think we'll give it a real go, because the last thing we want is a replay. So you know, if we're ahead, we'll just keep trying to get further ahead, I suspect, and if we're behind, we'll chuck the kitchen sink at it. So I can't see anything other than a positive result one way or t'other. And I quite fancy us.
Well, I think replays are done away with now, aren't they? It'll be on the day, is it, from the third round? I think.
Yeah.
They change every 5 minutes. Is it not this year?
No, I don't think it's this year. I think this is part of
this. I'll double check.
Hang on. A replay. I think it's part of...
Are we stopped recording?
No.
Well, we're not. We have now.
So just turn my mic off while I was just checking.
Well, you can do a clip there and edit there. Yeah. And you can come straight back in with the answer.
Yeah.
Clever clugs, yeah. I think it's part of this new deal that the Premier League are trying to strike with the EFL. And they're using it as leverage to try and get replays banned from next season.
Right, okay.
Especially if you're free to play them in Singapore or Saudi or something like that.
Oh, that'll be it. All right.
So
yeah.
A bit of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Or play Wrexham.
Yeah.
See, Wrexham put out at 1 minute past midnight today that they'd signed Mullin and Elliot Lee until 2027.
Oh, have they?
Replays in the third and fourth round of the fifth set to be scrapped after this season.
All right, okay.
As if we're prior to saving the winter break, which comes in next year.
Okay, so tell us when we're back on and we'll get back into there.
So, do you have to be in a transfer window if you're a Football League club to extend a player's contract?
No, I don't know.
So what's the point?
I think it's because everybody's on their Twitter feed at midnight.
Oh, right. Yeah, expecting someone.
Yeah, because they're Happy New Year and all that. Yeah. So it pops up.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
that's my guess.
Yeah. So it's more to do with Happy New Year. Yeah. We've done this.
Yeah. Everybody's up. They're all looking at the phone.
We've done this. Yeah.
Yeah. Bing, okay. Ding, ding. You've got your notifications.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, just check.
Hang on. Go.
No, Paul's just checked, and look, is a replay. If we draw at Watford, we definitely don't want that. We want that positive result. But you know, they're made up of so many players that we're so far away from the Championship that, apart from sort of the likes of Jake Livermore and the goalkeeper Ben Hamer, there's nobody I really know. Paul, I know you've seen Watford this season, and you know the way that the manager wants them to play, the former Barnsley guy, isn't it?
Ishmael.
But it's a really colourful 11. There's Ivory Coast, Nigerian, Brazilians, Dutch, Austrian, Danish, Moroccan, Canadian, Swedish internationals in there.
And Tom Ince.
Yeah.
You were reading out the names, Phil, on 1866 Sport, the last home game, of who their players were, and I didn't catch what it was. I thought it was the wine list.
But Paul, so when you went down, did you say, was it Rotherham or something?
I went to Rotherham, yeah.
Yeah, they give you a pronunciation
list.
They do,
yeah.
In the press box.
Lovely people. They're really good,
Yeah. But who knows what they're going to do? I just think we want to win it more than them, I think. That doesn't mean to say that they'll not be able to put a team out capable of beating Chesterfield.
Yeah.
But Yeah. You've got to look back to West Brom. We had our chance against West Brom. West Brom were...
And Livermore played in that game.
They did that game. West Brom were on a bit of a run at that time. They were lower down than Watford are now, but they just swapped managers, hadn't they? And they were on a bit of a run.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they were an informed side. Watford haven't won at home since November. So, you know, it is. It's a question of... Yeah. Is getting into the playoffs significantly more important than the FA Cup?
If they play Ryan Porteous and Wesley Hoot, the two centre halves, and Chesterfield have got a chance because Rotherham gave him. Rotherham lost 5-0. Let me just remember this. But Nombe gave him a real. Gave those two a real working over in the game, and there's the opportunities for Rotherham during that game as well. So. It was more Rotherham's defence than it was the attack in many respects in that. But if they do play those two, then Chesterfield have got an opportunity. It's just whether they load up. But Watford are going up front. They've got quite a few attacking players. Espria's one to look out for. Kone's a good player. But you know they may play Deli Bashiru. You know they've got players in there capable of beating Chesterfield as they should have.
Yeah, absolutely. Their second 11 should be better than our first 11.
Exactly.
Championship of the National League, no question about
exactly.
that. But we've got Tom Naylor who's played at level. We've got Will Grigg
Who's played at that level. It's a different Chesterfield 11 that was set out against West Brom, wasn't it? Yes. The Hawthorns. Yes. You know.
Oh, yeah. So, and we look back, Portsmouth, best team in the first round. Orient, good team.
Yeah.
So we're beating teams two divisions higher. So, you know, you could argue through the back door, well, we ought to be a League One side, and that's only one division different to Watford. But we've got the firepower, Stuart, to potentially cause an upset.
I think so. Yeah. We've got a game plan, haven't we? Which can be accommodated to take on teams of any ability.
Mm.
You know, the way we go out and play, I think they ought to be a bit more worried about how we might play than we should be about how they might play. You know, because I think we'll do our homework, you know, and we'll know what to expect, and everyone will be briefed because we've got a professional sort of off the pitch team here to do that kind of thing. Can we go and win it? I suppose we can, yeah. Mm. I have to say, it doesn't matter to me whether we do or whether we don't. We'd sooner get a win against Gateshead, you know.
I'll give the flip a coin, Gateshead, you know, win for
but,
sure.
But then, you know, we went on a baddish run a bit after we went out the cup last season, and people will say, well, we went on that run because we were in the cup. Well, perhaps we went on that run because we got beat in the cup. You know, so let's keep on winning matches, whoever they are.
Yeah, well, we're at a level now where the money means something for wins, doesn't it? They're not going to take anything of note from the gate.
No.
Because you're not going to be huge gate at £10 and £5, and it's a divvy up. It means nothing realistically on the gate.
Split in for the non-league teams still in this round.
Yeah, it's 5% better or something like that. Isn't it? Yeah.
But if another win in the cup can bring you a decent player in the middle of March or something, you know, when you might be flagging, who knows? Then let's go and have a win.
And how did we get to Watford, Paul? That game against Portsmouth was absolutely fantastic. Bit of a stroke of luck against Orient with the OG and everything along those lines. But the Portsmouth performance is right up there with against a team that I think it was the same 11 that played in their League One game the week before against Reading. Might have been one change.
They gave us ultimate respect, didn't they, by playing absolutely everybody. They were unchanged from the game, wasn't it, against
Reading?
It was a phenomenal... From the 1 second, as soon as the ball was cleared, if you watch, this is on national television.
Well, that was that.
Will Green charging down their goalkeeper, and you just thought, right, we're up for this,
I said on air, I said exactly the same thing with that. That was, that was
intent.
Absolute intent.
It did. Goalkeeper set the tone, didn't it? It quieted down an expectedly noisy away end. We didn't really hear much from him. As the game went on.
Nobody stole the bell clapper, did they?
No, he was going off for a little while, wasn't he? Yeah, in the second half.
Don't you just get on with it. Yeah. I know Pompey fans, times many, who think that particular sort of personality and his mates with the drums and all that kind of business actually kills the atmosphere.
You know Portsmouth fans, what were people who you know who were Portsmouth followers, what was their view of Chesterfield's performance?
Tended not to get a great deal of analysis of that. I think they were kind of taken with how poor Pompey were. But of course, you need the opposition to make them poor, don't you, really? Because Pompey have proved top of the league, they can still go to places and play and win, you know, if the opposition can be beaten. But us, you know, from minute one, weren't going to be beaten. And you know, yes, they were unlucky to lose the defender and then Kamara with injury. But, you know, even with those people on the pitch, we'd have still won it.
Yeah, sure. But of course, in the FA Cup, where you can use five substitutes, it's not as though, oh, well, I can't do something that I want to do later on. No. And, of course, Orient, next round, Daz, they did the same. They made one change, and that was an injury or a suspension or something, wasn't it? Yeah. So they gave the ultimate respect, and it was the same result.
Yeah, I mean, just nipping back to the Portsmouth game, I thought, I felt we were comfortable, to be quite honest. Can you remember a map really forcing the keeper into many seconds? Not really. And, you know, their manager was very, very respectful of us in his team selection and after the game, just said, best team won, better on the day, outplayed us from start to finish. Richie Wellens wasn't quite as graceful, was he? But
well, I think he was more frustrated with his team, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think
a lot of fans don't really get that.
Portsmouth weren't as good as us and probably didn't play at the top of their game.
Yeah.
Orient was shocking.
Yeah.
First half.
Yeah, that could have been 3-4-5 quite easily. And it looked a golfing class, and anybody coming in the ground would have thought we were two divisions higher. That's the best compliment I can pay us on the day.
Absolutely right. And of course, you know, that's three consecutive, just to have that qualifying victory against Kettering. It's not very often, Stuart, that you win three different rounds in the FA Cup. That's like, from if you start in the first round of the Football League, that's like getting to the fourth round.
Well, it is,
doesn't happen often.
Well, we've done that, what, about six or seven times in our entire history?
Yes.
You know? A non-league club has reached the third round of the FA Cup in three consecutive seasons five or six times.
Yes.
And one of that was cheap Corinthians, who got a bye to the third round anyway. You know,
But Bournemouth are the most recent that did that.
Yeah, they are. And Nottingham, I think, just before that.
Yes.
But then there's a bit of a gap back to the 50s, I think. But
So,
you know, we're a decent side. Yeah, you look at the Orient game, as you say, and people are saying, well, it's Pompey game. There were people on Pompey Forum saying that was like only the second time they'd lost to a non-league club in umpty diddly years or something, you know. And I looked at it and I thought, well, hang on, we're not a non-league club. And then I think, well, yes, actually we are, but we're not. You know, we're not playing like one. Yeah. We haven't got the staff of a typical non-league club, have we? So, you know.
All the fan base.
It is just 8898
there on New Year's Day. Yeah. That's 171 from Solihull, so 8,700. Yeah. That's only 400 less than the most Chesterfield fans has ever been in this ground in the Gillingham.
Well, indeed, and the average home support is 1,005 higher than it was in the first season here, which was the highest until this season.
Yeah.
I think last season was higher than that, but this is 800 and something higher than last season.
Last season was slightly higher home fans, slightly lower all fans.
Because
of course you get more supporters in League Two than you do on the taxi service in the National League, really.
But the support is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, and the away support is 750 average away support this season as well for Chesterfield.
Cookie made reference, didn't, to that in the interview, didn't he? Said somehow, somewhere, since the last time we were here, we found 3,000 fans. And he's absolutely right, isn't he? So,
I was talking to Nathan Kahn for the Trust before we started recording here, and it just shows that all that work and the battle that they had to do with previous regimes to get school offers in and kids in.
Yeah.
It just shows, because you look round, and Paul and I can't look round much because we're stuck in a seat and can't wander around. But the number of kids and families and everything, it's, and bearing in mind when you think what the season ticket holder and the profile was immediately before COVID, when the average age of a Chesterfield supporter was 372, there was a massive proportion, of concession tickets, and they were at the top end, not the bottom end, concession tickets. And there's kids all over now, with mums and dads and grandmas and granddads and uncles and aunties. And They come because they've seen good football, but a lot of them come because they've been encouraged to come with school offers and scouts offers and jiu-jitsu club offers or whatever it might be, and they get into it. And as I said to Nathan, you know, the dyed-in-the-wall multi-year season ticket holders have got to have a first game. And if you never come to a first game, you don't come again. And getting them here for the first game has been absolutely phenomenal. All those battles pre-COVID to try and get this sort of thing done, it's happened post-COVID, but of course the crowds have increased post-COVID anyway because of the ownership issue and the football.
I had two friends who...
Have you got that many?
who rang me between Christmas and New Year. And said, we fancy going to the match. When did these two last go to the match? They were at Wembley, but when did they last go to a match here? And can we wait till the day of the game to get tickets? I said, I suggest you don't. Let me go on and get you two, so, which is what I did. I think there were only about 400 left then. And they sat on the north stand. I met them here and gave them the tickets, and they got... on the north stand, and I spoke to him after the game, and he just said, absolutely loved it at Wembley, gutted, loved it today. We didn't think we'd ever be allowed back in at 2-0 because I had told them they'd be barred if we lost again.
Quite right too.
But they said, fantastic, absolutely delighted, you know, and these are people in my age who haven't been for years and years and years and years. And suddenly they've got the bug, you know, and that's gone through the entire supporter base, like you said, the parents and the kids at school age, right through all the work the community trust does at every level. It's all a feel-good factor. Team, it's great football to watch, let's be honest. I mean, we're scoring goals for fun. What did we get in the calendar year? 115 goals or something daft?
I didn't watch the video that went out, because I thought, well, that's going to be about 5.5 hours long.
Hour and a half.
Is it something like that?
But I mean,
I'm halfway through it.
this is us we're talking about. You know, the team that had John Duncan as manager twice. 115 goals in a calendar year. It's terrific, and the more the merrier. The old thing came up at the weekend again, didn't it? Oh, we're going to have to fill the corners in, you know.
That's teary,
mate. You know, we won't ever, of course, but nevertheless. If it gets to the point where we're selling out 8,000-plus home tickets week in, week out, then they've done a job, haven't they? Because these are historical... high figures.
And the thing is, if we get into the AFL, and you'll get a few teams that will be wanting the North Stand then, so it'll be difficult to sell tickets in the season tickets in the North End. So it's going to be, well, if you want to come, you've got to get a season ticket. It's going to feel like that, isn't it? Well, Wrexham are like that now, aren't they? They hold a few back for international visitors, I believe. And I was reading somewhere that they put a temporary stand up.
They have,
And it's going. They're not going to. The additional revenue for the fans isn't going to cost. Isn't going to cover the cost of the stand. No. But they just want more people to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, which I suppose if you've got owners like they've got, you can afford to do that. But like you say, filling the corners in, it'd take 25 years of filling every bit in because of the cost to do. The only thing they could realistically do is build a second level behind one of the ends. You know, and then you could keep people coming in while they did that, but that's going to cost as much as the stadium costs with inflation and everything along those lines and retro doing it. Do like a Walsall or a Stockporty type of thing.
When you think we were struggling with 2,000 and 3,000 not so long ago, just pre-COVID, when we were struggling to stay out of the National League flipping north, to this now, and we still look back, you know, Cookie said it, didn't he, yesterday, about how many more fans we've suddenly got again.
Well, talking about the back into the National League, the first season, 2018-2019, in the entire season, it was a 46-game season, because it's been lesser numbers since then with numbers and COVID and everything. We got 59 points in the entire season. We started yesterday, New Year's Day, with 59 points. You know, so you can see how the football's come on.
Yeah.
And, you know, to enjoy. It's the same with a lot of things, isn't it? You know, to enjoy the peaks that we've got. And we're a non-league team, it shouldn't be a peak. You've got to have had the nadir moments like we had when, if we'd have lost at Chorley, we'd have been playing Bishop's Dartford.
Yeah. Yeah. I was there that day, and those were the two of the most valuable goals we'll ever score.
Yeah.
I like the fact that the reference is that Chesterfield fans are going to Watford, and those tickets, it was only when they released 400 that it was entirely season ticket holders that were going to the game.
Yeah,
you know, they'd been rewarded. That there you are. There's your reward from that. And obviously, the extra 400 came out that we'd gone on 15 minutes on general sale, weren't they? That came out. But I mean, that is just a remarkable scenario is unheard of in like 1992, do you know what I mean? Never mind, like 4 years ago, even under Salter.
Well, I don't think we took that. How many did we take to Derby when we played Derby in the fourth round? We cooked
5,000, I think.
Similar sort of numbers.
Well, they didn't go that quickly.
No. Oh, we were League One pushing for Championship.
Yeah, we were a good side.
Absolutely. But, you know, obviously people saw what the nominal capacity was of the Vicarage Road end and read something into it that was never there in the first place, and it didn't help with that being just pushed around. I think the club probably ought to have said, well, actually, we've been given 3,500 and Watford have said there's no more. And you might not know the reasons why, but it's the 15% that they've got to give up or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is because the away end's half of it and the other away end's half of it. And so the concourse sharing means that you'll actually never get 5,800 people in that stand from the same club.
Half of it's the family stand and half it's away supporters.
So they decant down to one of the side stands where the home fans are from the family. Yeah. So it isn't a 5,800 capacity, is it?
No.
Certainly.
They've got this big section down the middle and the two ends, I think a few rows at the front, whatever.
But looking back to games we played since the last podcast that we did, and we were talking about those 100 and whatever it was goals during the year. Yeah, the highlight games really was the Barnet 4-2, and it wasn't a 4-2 match because Chester we were 4-0 up when the stoppage time board went at the end of the game, and two late games. But that performance, Paul, blew our minds, didn't it, really?
Well, I'd like to say yes.
Oh, you were.
I was covering Watford against Rotherham.
You were spying.
Watford. I was just conducting Matt Taylor's last interview for Rotherham United as manager. Yes, yes. As the news came through, Tom Bilk did buy me a drink at the Christmas do. So we had to swap for that game. He did buy me a drink
in non-car socks off Stuart.
yes, it entirely did, didn't it? Yeah, you know, 0-0 at half time, wasn't it? And in we went, what was it, 4 goals in about 20 minutes or something?
Yeah, it wasn't very long.
It was almost Solly Hullion in the rate at which we put
Solly Hullion, yeah.
But
Griggs from Solihull, by the way. I mean, yes. Will Griggs is a Solihull boy. Yeah.
Oh, well, then they're not all like that then. Okay. it's just what we do, isn't it? It does knock your socks off, but it doesn't entirely surprise you. Yeah, as indeed do the two goals that we shipped once we're 4-0 up.
No,
because we very nearly did the same against Eastleigh, didn't we? We did do the same.
Yeah, well, it was 3-2 against Eastleigh, and very, very similar there as well. That was there was a little bit longer to go there, wasn't there? There was only one goal between. That was a little bit more nerve wracking, but you know, to have got 3-0 up in that game and 4-4 because I think Eastleigh were on a reasonable run at that point, and of course McCallum was going nuts, wasn't he?
Yeah, him and Quigley scoring lots of goals. Yeah.
And then two proper away wins, the sort of thing that away died in the wool away supporters love to see. The 2-0 at Woking and the 1-0 at Hartlepool were both just terrific away performances, Paul. I know you were at those games.
I wasn't at those ones, yeah, I can clarify for that. Yeah, Woking was, and considering what the Woking side was, which hadn't changed too much from the team that reached the playoffs the season before, I was disappointed to see how low they'd fallen. Now confidence level had dropped in their team.
And Kellen was out, who's Tom Naylor Hartley.
He is their talisman, isn't he? And they didn't have Reece Brown, he was on international duty. Yeah. Okay, there's two. But they had Greg O'Cox, who was back from injury, but never gave him a sniff at all, you know. And, you know, the Porrigaman's a useful player, isn't he?
But
you
Cookie knows him inside
and
out.
And if he was 5 years younger, Chesterfield would definitely have him in the team, you know, that
old Ronnie Bocco. how old's Robbie Bocco? Is he still of an age?
Is he still going? Still making pies.
Probably still king of Benin.
But yeah, you know, Chester got the early goal through Quigley in the first half, and then settled it in the second through Dobra for that one. So never really got troubled by Woking, and they say disappointed with that. I hope they're better in the second half of the season.
Well, they were nailed on playoff at the start of the season.
People were bigging them up, really.
And you mentioned Dobra, of course, his early goal, great volley, but he didn't hit it as cleanly as he would. But
at Hartlepool,
but it went through a forest of legs, yeah. And then Chesterfield, Hartlepool had a few moments, but that was just a proper John Duncan away win, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we've not had many of those.
No, I'm struggling to think of a second half chance at Chesterfield. I don't think they did they? But they did enough defensively not to give Hartlepool a sniff either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those where both sides cancelled each other out. They're never going to score in a month of Sundays. Oh, apart from when they brought Josh Umar on and Tom Naylor made that absolutely stunning challenge.
Yes.
But then again, he was doing was running into the box.
Yes.
Yeah. There was no shot entitled, you know. Yes. So
he's still got work to do, Umar, and
exactly,
but it wasn't
yeah.
absolutely phenomenal. Mm. One of the Mike Jones style battles that we've had over the last year or two. And then Aldershot home a 4-win. That was from a 1-down, a rare first half goal for Chester, because it was 1-0 after to Aldershot after 3 seconds, wasn't it? And then 1-1 after 4 seconds.
Yeah. The horrendous miss by the referee on that of Palmer being pulled back for their goal, because he just hoofs it clear if he's not physically restrained, and it left them a tapping, you know. But anyway, we bounced back, did we not? DJ's getting a little bit of a reputation for this free kick business, because that was a blinder again. After that, we just turn the wick up again, and teams can't live with us. When we get to that point where it's just we're building attack after attack, this is why I get the frustration with the fans, but just let the bloody process play out, you know. Keep passing it, keep moving them, keep stretching them side to side and front to back.
And of course, kick-off time on that day, Aldershot were in the playoff zone.
Yeah, absolutely. Scoring goals for fun.
Yeah.
They'd have some terrific away performances. They did not swing out of the court.
Just a few days before they won in Stockport.
Yeah, they're a good side.
And they gamble. They leave three up all the time, so they're gambling. But you've just got to let the team do what they do. And what worries me, me and Stu were having a bit of a tete-a-tete yesterday on Twitter about this. We cannot let our tension get on the pitch.
No.
And in the next 10-12 weeks, we have got to, as a fan base, just sit still and let them do what they do.
Yeah.
As long as it takes. Some matches it might take 80 minutes, 85 minutes. We've just got to let them keep doing it and not moans and groans. Somebody yesterday were moaning behind me. Freckleton shooting, he's 30 yards out, you know.
Yes. Just look at Paul Cook when they shoot from there.
Yeah,
that's not what they're programmed to do.
No. I mean, it was more likely to hit KFC as he was the back of the net, you know what I mean? And 10 minutes later, we're 3-2 in front, so just let them do what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely, can't argue with that at all. And we've talked about lots of goals scored there. If you look at the scoring shots, just in the National League, Griggs on 12, and then you've got Naylor, Colclough, Dobra, Quigley all on 7 each. Now, we just touched on your 20-goal scorer. Well, the way it's going, Grigg will be that man, but McCallum's already there, and Eastleigh are 11th.
Yeah.
But when the opposition sit down and say, right, who's the danger man? Who is the danger man, Paul? Is the danger man?
Well, I mean, you've got that many options. I think the danger man is coming off the bench, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you've got 7 goal scorers on the bench, like Ollie Banks. You know, Joe Quigley's got 7 goals. He's got 5. He's got 2 from starts and 5 from the bench.
And Berry, the I know it was against Southport, but that goal he scored against Southport.
No,
I've watched it loads of times. I still don't know how he got through that wall of defence.
He couldn't even get in the pitch yesterday.
Yeah,
James Berry.
But it was too it was too congested yesterday. Yes. I was thinking Berry will not be coming on today.
Wasn't stretched enough, was it for him?
Yeah. And there was, and at Solly, I know he did come on. Did he come on at Solly? I think he came on at Solly.
Yeah.
But that's a small, much narrower pitch. And I just thought, no, Berry's not your man yesterday for that game, but he probably will be against Watford.
Well, he might start. So But your danger is off the bench, yeah, really. So, you know, you get up to 60, 65 minutes and people are saying, oh, Cook, don't make any changes until 70 minutes. Well, you know.
Well, he's got to make changes at 62 yesterday.
He couldn't make any changes. Yeah. He couldn't make any changes yesterday because we were blooming scoring.
Yeah, like, it got too warmed up ready.
Yeah.
And then we scored three goals before we all went out of play again. So, yeah. You've got Tom Naylor, 7 goals there in the National League, 9 in all competitions. Nobody would mark him out as a scorer. No. He's never scored in his career. No. Yeah, we're on 25 league games, and that's the best figures he's ever had in his career. I know he's playing at the lowest level he's played in his career, but he's not a scorer.
Yeah. But he said yesterday in one of his interviews, it might have been the one on TV, we've been working on me getting into the box, but getting in, I've been going in too early.
Yeah.
So him playing that role we spoke about earlier, where he was sat deeper, more in front of Beck, meant when he did go, he was getting into the box later. And he said coming into the box later, they'd spoke about it at half time, meant he was coming onto the ball. We dragged everybody to the goal line, and so when he came in for the goal, he got 15 yards.
Mm. And he's a big lad.
It was a great cool finish, wasn't it?
Yes, it was very, 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 very good. No question about that. But you know, one of those 7 goal scorers, Paul, Ryan Colcliffe, he's back to what he was when he first came. Just we've had a quiet spell, and you know, he's had the injury issues that he's got to get over, and he had illness as well, didn't he? But he's back on it. He was terrific in both games against Solihull.
Yeah, there was that theory, wasn't there? They hadn't scored since he renewed his contract, wasn't there? So you know, but yeah, he's back on it again. A couple of goals, isn't he, last few games as well? And yeah, he's looking pretty good.
Shot that hit the post.
Yeah, indeed. When he sprinted on, you didn't want to take him off at all. But you know, he's coming in for a. He's getting a header now and again. He scored a couple of headers last season, didn't he? Or getting into that box with that late run. Mm. And that changed the game in terms of the equaliser, didn't it? So, yeah, he's a dangerous player all out. And you go back to the four that Chesterfield have got. It ain't just a striker. It's whoever's behind them as well as the danger. So.
And what was it, 4 changes yesterday? They can do all the homework. They want the opposition. They just don't know what team Paul is going to play on that.
We don't know. Yeah. Well, we watch it every week. We haven't got a clue.
It could be Jacobs, Dobber, and Mandeville. It could be Banks, Oldacre, and Barry, or whatever. Yeah. You know, who knows? You know, and they're all in there. And in my time, I know this is the lowest level we've played at in modern times. But we've never had in my time supporting Chesterfield a strong. Not involved on the first 11 that we've had. You and I have been coming for a long time, and you look back at the great teams, the 69-70 side, that was a pretty settled
12-13.
84-85 side, that was similar.
Same
again.
Team every 16, week.
Yeah. Even since we moved here, the 10-11 side, it changed with injuries as they came along. Yeah. People like Smalley came in later on in the season, and it was a pretty settled side in 14-15. Paul, the 13-14 and 14-15 with Paul Cook here last time around. But we've never had players of the quality of Michael Jacobs not getting a regular start. We've never had players of the quality of Ollie Banks not getting a regular start. The way that Banks is playing this season, getting a regular start.
Jacobs, to me, what a footballer he is. Dearie me, I mean, his vision, his cleverness with his runs, he knows which spaces to drop into, when to run, when not to run, and when not to run sometimes is a bigger skill as when to run.
Yes.
He's just a terrific foot. I mean, that run he made at Solihull, where the guy cleared it off the...
James Clark.
What a goal that would have been, you know, outside of the foot, bending into the far corner.
Oh,
having
lovely.
Danced his way into the box. And his vision is terrific. And when he's in and around the box, defenders don't know what the hell to do with him. Because you know, if you go and try and tackle him, he'll nick it away from you, you're going to bring him down. And he can see a pass as well. He plays so often between the lines into people.
Mm. But the whole thing about opposition setting up to play Chesterfield, I mean, just yesterday, and I know this podcast won't come out today, but on the New Year's Day game, Dobra started off in the middle, moved to the right, moved to the left. So you don't even know where Dobra's going to be playing. he played in all three attacking midfield with the substitutions and, yeah. and the sort of, Solihull away. Ollie Banks. They were playing that offset. I think Danny Webb's referred to it as an offset front three. Yeah. They were playing that. Nearly all the crosses from the right hand side at Solihull away came from Ollie Banks. Yeah. You know, he's the central man.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you've got King coming in down the right hand side as well. So you don't know what it's. Which going to be? So, as you said, we don't know what it's going to be. So how on earth will the opposition know?
I don't think the squad know what it's going to be either. No.
What I can tell you, it'll be 4-2-3-1. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. Wonder what Mike Bassett'd do.
Yeah.
If he's the next manager, when Paul Cook moves on, if Mike Bassett comes in, we might be. Martinez told a great story about that as well when he was at Swansea on the open top bus parade, having just won whatever it was that they'd won with him, because he played, I think it was 4-2-3-1 at Swansea, and he says somebody was running alongside the bus knocking on the window, it's 4-4-2 in the Mike Bassett style, you know, and he said I was just there grinning at him outside, you know, and it is, and that you were saying about you've got to stick with it because the it's not negativity but the lack of positivity, I suppose. It's the lack of positivity. Look, we score lots of goals in the second half.
Everybody wants us to do well.
We've won 20 out of 25 games.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake, but in the National
when
League.
When we keep dropping 2-0 behind to the likes of, you know, whoever, we've done it plenty of times, haven't we?
Say 22 points from losing positions this
season. That's incredible.
Mm. Yeah, it is when you win quite a lot, because normally, and we always say if you score first, we'll win. I know that's not always been the case this season, because, of course, scored first against Altrincham and scored first against Southendon and lost. So it's not always the scored first against Oldham and Drew. Didn't score first. I think the only team we've not been in the lead against this season is Maidenhead, isn't it? Because we equalised in the 1-1 draw, so I think that's the only team we've not been in the lead against.
Probably,
I think.
Solihull.
Gateshead, because we haven't played them.
I thought you were talking about just away games. Sorry.
No. Just all games, I think. Yeah, it's phenomenal all round. Okay, we've talked about the games that have been. We've talked about the future games. Any little points you want to make? And I'm going to ask everybody for their highlight of 2023 as well, so you'll be able to think about that. But anything that we've not got about now that we want to talk about? I think we've covered just about all of my list. I think the only two things that I've not tick up against are the names of Ryan Boot and Joe Quigley. Boot, I hope he starts at Watford. He deserves it. Silence.
Silence
is golden.
Silence of agreement.
I hope he starts on Saturday. And Joe Quigley, you know, signed that new contract, as have several players. Let's not forget that's been, you know, drop a couple in here and there. Cook's always said there's just been too many ins and outs over the years, and he's just trying to find a settled squad. And for a player like Quigley, who's made more appearances off the bench than he has starts, what a boost for him it is, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, nobody would have expected that, would they? The crowd take to him, don't they? But I don't know whether they take it to him as if he's the Will Grigg type of player that they. They get,
Will Grigg's still got plenty of outers.
I know, sorry, I don't know. You can score, you can make over 500 appearances and you still get your critiques, don't you? Yeah. So, you know.
It's just one of the finest centre-forward performances I've ever seen in the blue shirt.
Yeah.
All round.
Yes, all round. It's that movement, stretching the defence.
Yeah.
And the way that Solihull play with three at the back as well is harder to stretch when there's three of them.
But his hold-up play and he's bringing people into the game. Plus, he's dangerous, you know, in and around the box, as we know. But terrific all-round.
I mean, talking about, like, sort of experienced players again, Michael Jacobs again, 500th career appearance yesterday in all comps. Liam Mandeville's set to make his 200th on Saturday if he gets selected. So, of course, in all competitions. So, we'll see. But teach him
to get ill. You'll get ill, mate.
But, Joe Quigley just buys into the idea that it's a team game. a squad game. And I know he's battled hard because they've sent him out on loan here, thither and everywhere and whatnot. Yeah. And now he's finally settled. Well, he was at Yeovil a little bit, wasn't he? He spent 18 months there, I think, at Yeovil, or a couple of years or whatever. But come to Chesterfield, who'd have thought? And that January month where everything went pear-shaped, you know, 2 years ago, and he's still in. He's just signed a new deal, hasn't he?
Everybody's happy with it. At the end of his previous one, it was, well, like, we don't want him anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's just worked, and he says he's fitter and everything. One thing I hadn't written down on my list, of course, is Jamie Grimes. I didn't see the incident with Jack Stevens. I don't know if you did.
No,
it wasn't captured on the stream, was it? I don't think.
No, he
not much of the game wasn't captured on the stream for what I know.
No, it was like watching with one of those old flip book things you see at the seaside. It was that bad. I understand he lent his head into such a position that the guy could make the most of it. Yes. So it was stupidity. Mm. And we should, we've got previous with Solihull. We should have.
There was a funny incident with Stevens when he went down appealing for a penalty towards the end, and it wasn't given, and Tyra bent down to pick him up, and he put his hand up and he pulled his hand away. That was really, really. Myself and Jamie were absolutely just laughing with hilarity, unable to describe what had happened for about 20 seconds.
Well, one thing I did like about the Jamie Grimes sort of sending off incident, Jamie Grimes shouldn't have done it, and he'd been wound up by something because he came on as a sub, didn't he, Stevens?
Yes.
He was literally a minute after Grimes had been sent off, Stevens was involved in another incident as well, where Armando Dobber just sprinted out across and just absolutely nailed him and picked up a yellow card straight away. And I thought, that's a team right there.
That is an
absolute team. Dobber's just come on as sub. Yeah. He's seen what's happened. I'm going to absolutely nail you because you just got my mate sent off there.
Yes.
So, I thought that was just brilliant.
Yeah. And Grimes plays tough, but he was sent off for 2 yellow cards at Dagenham a while ago. He's played 110 games since then and picked up 11 yellow cards. So that's 1 yellow card every 10 games. Yeah. For a centre-half, that's 4 in a season.
Yeah.
Mike Jones gets 10 in 11 games.
You know,
and so for a central defender not to be anywhere near a suspension on yellow cards in this day and age is remarkable in itself.
That was the only extension, really, that I thought might have been a tad premature with Mike. I know he's super fit and everything else, but If let's hope we go up, will he play much in a League Two team? I don't know.
Well, he might be on the bench because they get extended benches and stuff like that.
Oh, he does. 43 on the bench.
Even if he comes on for half an hour and whatnot, he's got a lot of shoring up and mopping up to do. So
good point. Yeah. Well made there, Paul. Yeah,
it's easy to forget, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. So any more before we decide what our highlights of 2023. Were. Well, no. Well, I've had a chance to think it because I knew I was going to ask this question, and you guys didn't because we don't do any preparation, as you probably know. from a personal point of view, getting the Outstanding Achievement Award at the Player of the Year was there. But from a team perspective, 1-15, drawn 1, lost none at home. All competitions can't do better than that. 15-1-0, and one of them games was in 2024, so 14-1-0 for the first half. And that's just incredible.
And technically, 15-0.
Yes.
Because that goal should never, ever have been allowed.
No, that's the older one that we're referring to, which we all know about, of course. Yes, good point, So, it was a ridiculous decision, wasn't it? But, there you go. There you go. Come on, who's
going to
be next?
For an individual moment, was Mandeville's winner against Bromley in the semi-final of the playoffs. Up until yesterday, I don't think I'd heard a noise quite like it here. And it was the balmiest game, wasn't it? Everything happening, we had flipping interruptions and drones.
Yeah, we were still playing at 7 o'clock.
Helicopters with all sorts going on. It was red hot. Game was to and fro. I mean, everything flipping happening. And then to come up with a winner of that quality, in extra time was just that was a great day.
And Dobber at Wembley wasn't far behind.
That's tainted by the final outcome.
Yes, was yes well, yeah. as a moment.
Yes, you know? It took me a long time to get over Wembley. I have to say, I'm not really over it
before the bus left the car park.
Yeah.
I was really encouraged.
But that was 18 hours before the bus left the car park.
I was over it by the middle of August. Yeah. So you put it like that. Yeah. because the result was awful, but I was just so encouraged by the performance.
Well, we were the better team on the day. Yeah. We'd been the better team in three games against Notts County, but not won any of them.
Yes. Yeah.
And subsequently, we were the best of the rest.
Mm.
Bromley just a little bit behind. But we improved in the summer better than anybody else. Yeah. So we're the best of the rest and we've improved the most. So I said to quite a few people before a ball had been kicked that we'd win the league by 20 points this year.
Yeah.
It's all a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I've just felt that we were the best side that were left and we've improved significantly.
Yes.
And, win the games in hand and you're more on track for that.
Getting close.
Yeah.
And just sat on the bus, you kind of got the impression that the club was going in the right direction, it was in the right hands, and whatever we did this season, we'd go and do better next season. If we had to go back to Wembley again, I thought we'd win it.
Yeah, no regardless problem. Of disappointment, we've gone from nearly getting relegated and through knocked out in the eliminators, knocked out in the semi-final, knocked out in the final. It's progress.
Yeah.
It might be slow, but at that rate of progress, we'll win the Premier League in 92 years.
Well, there's a marker.
Yeah. We'll do a special podcast on that one.
Actually, a very Beyond the Grave.
Yeah.
We could record it now and put it onto storage.
Yeah, exactly. To get one of those tubes for Blue Peter.
You have to. Yes. I think sky is blue, clouds are white. God's got some recording equipment that he'll lend to us in 92 years' time. And we'll be all right.
I think. Proudest moment from my own personal perspective was doing full match commentary on the national radio via BBC Sounds. I was supposed to do the West Brom game on my own, so the 3-3, and it was an absolute corker of a match, and I absolutely loved it. And it was all about FA Cup football for me that day, and it didn't matter in the end that they got a lucky
because it was a semi final. You've got the guy who scored it should have been sent off.
It was just a phenomenal game, and proud of the team in respects. Not so much this year because we've covered that. It was Wembley. It was Wembley that I could never felt more that like we deserved to win on the day, totally by a long shot. You kind of knew that Notts County had that underlying element that they were going to get the result in the end.
Well, they got that killer instinct.
They had that story. They had the story, didn't they? And whatnot. But it would just be that cheeky Chesterfield to try and nick it at the end, But it never happened. But when the team got together, and there's a photograph you've got of the team all together on the Wembley, and got them together, and they're stood there, and the fans were all around. It's before they came and applauded. The fans are all singing, and some were crying, and I was making my way down to the touchline to try and get some post-match interviews. It took ages to get it. And I just felt proud of the performance that they put in that season, So. They were unlucky that they come up against Wrexham and Notts County, that the two sides were better than that season, because by and large Chesterfield should have been promoted that year, but it was just proud, just felt really, really.
And of course the man who started it off that day, Andrew Dallas, the weeping and wailing when he's not signed. This season, today he started two matches, one for Barnsley in the league, one for Barnsley in the League Cup. For Kilmarnock, he hasn't made a start. There's been 15 sub-appearances. Mm. And he scored on his Barnsley debut on August the 5th. He hasn't scored since.
Well, his agent will be smiling, though, won't he?
Yeah. Well, be interesting if anybody watches there's like a three-part series of Sky about Salford, about their rise, and that Dallas is one of the targets that they went for, and they went into detail, but they didn't name the player, but he put some extra little bits on his contract at the end, which Salford turned down in the end, and then he ended up coming to Chesterfield in March. So I think Chesterfield were very much a last sort of resort for him to come in March, but what a what a shift he put in when he did come there. So, you know, I wouldn't rule out
that moment against Eastleigh, it was right up there.
Well, exactly, yeah.
At the top of 2023.
I wouldn't rule out seeing Andrew Dallas again. This is just a hunch. I'm not saying that he's not part of it, but, you know.
But Cook's way of playing, doesn't he?
You know, because if there's an injury to Grigg, you've got Joe Quigley, but who you got? Young Harley Curtis is not quite there yet, you know. So I wouldn't rule out, again, like I say, it's just a hunch.
He can play as a 9 and a 10.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely right. So absolutely
don't,
right.
Don't.
But yeah, so it just shows you the whipping and wailing and gnashing of teeth when he didn't sign there. You will never go anywhere without Dallas. Well, we've done all right with that.
Yeah.
Stu, you were mentioning about the Dobra game. Is that your highlight? The Dobra goal at Wembley?
Yeah, I think so. As a one individual thing, you know.
It was individual brilliance.
Yeah.
And a circumstance that you think, hey, here we go, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because we'd been pulled, you know, we'd led for quite a portion of the game and been pulled back, haven't we?
Yeah, with a fluke, yeah.
And then, you know, when you're pulled back, you think, oh, here we go, you know. But we managed to keep them at bay for most of the rest of that time, took the lead again, you know. And it ended like it did, didn't it? But as I say, coming out afterwards and sat on the bus and just starting to reflect, you know, you're kind of driving past coach loads of Notts County fans looking out the window with a big smile on my face, which must have confused them.
I'm actually proud as well that Chester lost to Notts County and not Wrexham, because that would have hurt more, I think, because Notts County were a good team.
A football team, a really nice team to watch.
I wouldn't have liked the lump pit, let's just get Mullen penalty, fall over, whack it in, that type of performance from Wrexham, who I didn't like at all, so I don't like them now. So personal
opinion. Or we've been hitting the arch half the time, wouldn't
we? Yeah.
But we're the only team last season that beat them on aggregate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I happened to stumble
upon some highlights of a recent game, Wrexham. I think it was the one where they opened the new seating, uncovered seating. Yeah. Was it Newport at home they played over Christmas?
Big Welsh derby that they made out to be. Big Welsh 400 miles between the two.
So, I'll do a poll. How do you think both goals came?
Log throws from the right hand side.
Correct.
I haven't seen that, but that was just a wild stab in the dark.
You honestly thought you were watching the same thing on repeat.
Here's the theory, isn't it? Here's what's happened. You've got Mullen, Fletcher. By this point, they've thrown all 17 forwards on this. James McLean in there. Bentosa's doing the throw. They're all in there. The two centre halves in there. Elliot Lee hangs around outside the penalty area because he's the last man standing. Yeah. And he's the one who scores the goal, usually, isn't he? Because what a class player he is.
He's a very good player. Yeah. He is the best footballer in their team. And I quite like Dolby as well. He can play a little bit when he can get in. Absolutely. But no, very much so. And funny enough, I was reading the other day about pitches. And you mentioned Newport County there, and the pitch at Rodney Parade was awful, but I think they've had a new one. I think they've had a new same style as Boreham Wood pitch with this hybrid-y type of thing. So if we do go back there next season, we might actually not need to take our wellies.
All right.
I'll check on that before. But
it's still Wales, though,
isn't it? A great game in the English Football League, that Newport against Wrexham v Newport. Anyway, I think we're done. On Thursday the 4th of January at 7 o'clock, it is the Supporters Forum drop-in in the East Stand. So if you've got nothing better to do, pop in and have a chat about what you think can improve your match day. But match days at the moment, especially here at the SMH Group Stadium, can't be improved all that much, because Chesterfield this season have played in the National League, 12 games here, 11 wins, 1 draw, no defeats, 37 goals scored, so that's more than 3 a game, 18 conceded. It's been fun, hasn't it? Let's just hope for the next 21 games in the league and a few in the cup, we can have equally more fun. So thanks for listening to Sky is Blue with me, Phil Tooley, Stuart Bassam, Paul Fisher, Daryl Carpenter, and we'll be back the next time we're back.
FA Cup fifth round tie. He put it to the goalkeeper's right. The goalkeeper